is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. It is a bit surreal. I mean, as you begin to see the all of the drama playing out in election 2020, and what's really, really disturbing, I would have said ironic, but it's a bit disturbing, actually, is this was kind of all predicted. You know, we're sitting here pinching ourselves now and saying, are we, is this really happening? And sure it is. And this was predicted in September, October, and even earlier in the year than that, before November 3. This is the only story that really is front and center in the nation right now as we begin to all eyes turn to Georgia as well. We see what's happening there. Let's get the show started here right up front here. Welcome on Dr. James Mitchell. And Dr. Mitchell has a PhD in clinical psychology and served 22 years in the United States Air Force. He retired as a lieutenant colonel. Dr. Mitchell was involved in the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation program and interrogated 14 of the most senior high-value detainees in U.S. custody. You know, I love having Jim on because he looks at things a little differently, sort of like I like to, outside of the lines a bit. So I felt it was time to have a conversation with him. And so I want to start in Arizona, Jim. And this in the last day or so, the Arizona's legislative leaders are calling for an audit. This is in Maricopa County now, of the Dominion election software and equipment. The Senate president there, Karen Fan, and Speaker of the House, Rusty Bowers, they called an independent audit of the software and equipment again for the election. They said a significant number of voters believe that fraud did indeed occur, and with the number of irregularities, it is easy to understand why. Especially concerning are the allegations made surrounding the vendor Dominion. Now, there's a lot of stories about this, but here's a couple of interesting points, Jim. Arizona is now reporting 79.9% voter turnout, the highest in the country. What's your sense of what's happening with this equipment and a lot of the complaints we've been hearing in a lot of states, not just Arizona, of course? What are you hearing?
My impression about the whole Dominion issue is they're trying very hard to not let people audit that. And in my view, if it was honest and transparent, the auditing would be relatively straightforward. You know, here's the machine, here's the software that was running in the background, here's the software log of events that occurred during the election. You could look at those things and see what actually occurred. But what we're seeing, not just in Arizona, but in other places, is that the folks that run Dominion and the people whose election hinge on the votes that were cast using that machine not be thrown out. What we're seeing is that they're reluctant to have it looked at. They're reluctant to even consider it. Now, what they try to do is they try to frame the issue as Trump wanting to undermine a legal and fair election, as if they could occupy the moral high ground. But if they want to prove him wrong, it's a relatively straightforward thing to do. You really need to look at the event log of the things that occurred when that software was running.
Jim, nothing seems logical right now. And when you
let me cut you off. That's because logic's not what it's about. You know, for conservatives, facts matter. But what the progressives know and what people who are very good at propaganda know is that facts don't matter. What matter initially is feelings. And what they're doing is trying to create a background emotional sense of fear because they know, we know, as a psychologist, I know that when people are distracted by fear or something like COVID or, you know, they're threatening to take away Christmas and people can't go to funerals. You can go to a strip club or gamble, but you can't go to church. That sort of distraction makes it easier for them to manipulate other variables that they're interested in controlling. Because what happens is they create a sense of fear and then they feed information out that is more salient out of the news feed because of that fear, because it becomes more likely to be perceived because of that fear. So it's really not about logic. And in fact, the only time that logic will be applied in one of these kinds of attacks, and I do view it as an attack, a psychological warfare attack, the only time logic is likely to be applied is when the facts support the distorted case that they're trying to make. Because what they want to do is suppress any information that questions the case that they want to make, and just avalanche of information that supports it. And one way to do that is by controlling the media, controlling social media, controlling what the movie stars say, having everybody repeat the same message from as many different platforms as they can, and doing things like, I mean, I'm just going to ramble on, doing things like Biden saying that he's the president-elect, when in fact he's not the president-elect. He's cloaking himself in the trappings of that office so he can appear to be the winner. But the president-elect isn't in place until the Electoral College votes on the 14th, right? And so by doing those kinds of things and suppressing anything in the mainstream media that most people see that would question whether that fact was true or not, and particularly emphasize the notion that there might have been large-scale voter fraud, the mainstream media and the social media and the politicians who have access to the air are just carrying the water for whoever it is that's the Biden is the sock puppet for.
What's happening as I look at this to plan what you're saying, Jim, is a complete setup. They've been laying these traps right along for some time. And I think the challenge is the majority of people don't really see this. They're not paying that close attention. I mean, they know there's a lot of distractions happening with the election. But people are really, as you say, with fear, they're settled down with all kinds of problems, jobs, food, employment, COVID. All of this stuff is a very fear-induced campaign out there. And there's an enormous amount of distraction. It almost is, you know, the cheese in the trap kind of thing, and not really sure whether we launch for it or not, or if it's going to take our head off. So I think a lot of these things, the setups, because really, and when we say they is a big word, and I try to be careful with that because it does begin to sound like a conspiracy of some sort, but I guess there seems to be a lot of truth with this. If this is a grand plan to steal the country or steal the election at this time, they've laid an enormous amount of traps down there to pointing at the president, Jim, like he's this, he's that, he's never going to leave, he's addicted. All these things have been played out for the last 4 years. And now they see all of this, and now they can easily point to all of these traps they've lied down. So I guess what I want to ask you right up front, I mean, listen, this is really, it's a psychological game here we're playing, isn't it? I mean, this is a total psychological game with they. Pick it up there, please.
Well, it is. What most political pundits or political strategists know is that many people, in fact, most people will quit before they fail. And so what they try to do is create as much distrust and hope and fear and confusion and chaos so that what people who are Trump supporters will do, especially those who are on the margin, is they will just want the chaos to go away. They're tired of feeling bad. They're tired of reading about how horrible things are. They're tired of only hearing about the horrible things that Trump's doing. And this feeling that the election has been robbed is one of the things that can be leveraged into creating the kind of despair that have most people wanting to just quit, you know, wanting it to just go away. And I think that there is a deliberate effort on the part of some people to get people to quit just so that the chaos can stop. And as I said before, people are much easier to manipulate during times of crisis. They're not talking about stealing the election as if it was a constitutional crisis. And in fact, it is. There were a few days, maybe a couple of weeks right after the voting when COVID was out of the news, and then suddenly it's back and we got to cancel Christmas and you can't go outside and all of these other kinds of, I think, patently ridiculous ideas. And I think it is, you know, I used to catch wild parrots. We had a couple of wild parrots that were breeders. And what you had to do to catch one of those wild macaws who can bite a broomstick in half is you had to take one hand and kind of wave it in their face so that they alert on that hand when you reach behind them and get them by the by the mandible with your other hand. And I think that that's a lot of what we're seeing in the press and in the media and in the talking heads is that exact thing. They're distracting us with this COVID thing because, you know, 2020, I mean, CNN, MSNBC, those, even Fox News to a large extent, they're not covering the threat of voting, illegal votes and voting fraud, as much as they're covering this notion that there's this enormous pandemic that's going to wipe everybody out. And I think it's just a distraction to allow them to squeeze this thing through without it being, without most ordinary people having the opportunity to consider it.
No, they're not covering it. And this has frustrated an enormous amount of people, as you say, and because it's widespread. And it's not just COVID, but the other part they're covering is, again, the president-elect, which they crowned him really the on the third, the night of the third or the morning of the fourth, when all those votes started to change. Here's a couple of things here. Let's get into the Electoral College a moment here. A couple of things to tell folks about this. We've been reporting right along, and probably most of you know right now, that December 14th is a big day. That's the magic day where they cast their votes, every state, and this is how the Electoral College works. But also, there's another point to this here, Jim, and that's U.S. code requires that the states, all the states, resolve all their election-related disputes, and God knows there's plenty of those right now, 6 days before the electors cast their votes. So that date, Jim, would be December 8th, if you will. That's coming up pretty quick now. Today's the 6th Sunday, so just a couple days away here. And the states are expected to complete the recounts, resolve any of the legal challenges, certify the results. And so this is kind of known as safe harbor date, the deadline, if you will. I mean, you could get on the program here and come right down a litany bunch of things, you know, because there's so many disparities and question marks with this election in so many states, you'd spend days just going through all of them. It's a massive overload that nobody in the media, as you just pointed out, is paying attention to. How does this all play out now? Because all these things have to come, you have to have a widespread fraud is the case here that has to be made. And it's got to get up to the Supreme Court. And certainly there's been enough failures on the local level through the courts that it's got to get up to the Supreme Court. Now, how do you see this playing out between now and December 14th, Jim? What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, I think the progressives, the leftists, the Democrats are going to try to do as much as they can to frame the issue as anyone who questions the legitimacy of the election really is undermining democracy. I expect to see a lot more of that. And on the other side, what I expect to see is that they're finally going to be put in a position where they have to put up or shut up. You know, I think that that one Georgia film is interesting. There are lots of cases and lots of people signing affidavits and testifying under oath about election fraud across five or six states, those the states that, you know, we don't have to actually list, but I think they got a good shot in Georgia, and they've got a good shot in other cases. And it only takes one state really to change the mix, you know, for him not to pull in.
Now, that's a great point, Jim, right there. Hold that thought, because you're saying, and that's kind of what I've been anticipating and waiting for. I think most people are, that one state, Jim. And it seems like we're getting close in a couple of different states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, to say a few. And of course, you got Michigan and Wisconsin up there in the balance as well. But it hasn't happened yet, and the clock is running still. But you think one of those states, something's going to turn?
Assuming that it can get to the Supreme Court,
right?
I'm guardedly optimistic, because it is the case that the vast majority of Americans now believe that some form of voter fraud occurred, and it was widespread. And to simply say, nothing to see here, nothing to see here, you know, go back to hoarding toilet paper because we've got this big crisis, is going to go over less well with more people than it did in the first place. You know, they're just trying to, I think they're trying to run out the clock, right? They know that timeline that you described, the 8th is important, the 14th is the drop deadline for sure. Mm-hmm. And what all they're trying to do is run out the clock. And I view it very specifically as an effort to use Biden as a Trojan horse to install Kamala Harris as the president of the United States. And I have a hard time believing that any patriotic American will sit still for that very long.
It's going to get worse before it gets better, you say. And what I speak about there quite a bit, Jim, is a confrontational moment. I have a sense, and let me talk to you about this next, the path forward. I've had a sense for a while, an honest sense about this, a gut-wrenching feeling, I would put it, Jim, and this is for some time now, that we're headed towards some sort of a confrontational moment in our country. And I hesitate all the time to say it any more than that. I don't know what the confrontation is going to be. But as you say, when you say, well, they're not going to stand for that. And you're right. They keep going further and further and further. And it keeps becoming more blatant in your face what's happening more, as many people still deny it, that they're actually stealing the country right in front of our eyes here. So here's the quandary I face to you. And this, let's take a look and see if you can answer this from a psychological standpoint, is in the reality of where we sit. The rage on the left, if Trump prevails, and we always knew that was going to be rage because they posted that out there well before the election, that, oh, we'll burn the cities down again. We'll raise hell. We'll just, you know, which is what they've been doing right along anyways. But the rage of the left if Trump prevails is pretty serious. And the other thing is the frustration and anger of the right if Biden wins. Both of these groups are going to be unleashed on the country. Either way, our path in the future here is a bit uncertain, which brings it back to the point of what you're saying, gets worse before it gets better, or what I call a confrontational moment. How serious do you get? What are the possibilities that might play out there? And how serious do you think in your gut does this feel?
Well, throughout our history, we've had uprisings. You may remember immediately after the Civil War, when people weren't getting the salaries they were promised, they actually occupied a section of Washington, D.C., and they had to send the military in to disperse them eventually. So the American folks, will do what they do. My suggestion is that they do it through the voting booth and do it through the normal way. Sometimes you have to hold your nose and vote for a Republican, like I think in Georgia. Those two Republican senators need to be reelected just so that they don't have control of the House and the Senate and hopefully not the presidency. So I could see it going either way, but normally for it to become like a rioting, shooting war kind of thing, there has to be some sort of a crisis event, but it has to be some sort of an egregious event. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to get mad enough in mass to have, legions of people turn out with their weapons. If the news media continues to present this thing as, well, we finally got those Trump traitors and rubes under control. Now that we've got the election, the president-elect can go and do whatever he wants to do. You got to remember that the social media, the media in general, most of the televised media, the stars, most of the organizations, all feeding the same message out there, and that is that it was a free and fair election and that Biden is the president-elect. And I think there has to be some egregious event. There would have to be some egregious event that enraged people. It's like there's a lot of kindling now, but there hasn't been a lightning strike in the forest yet, you know. Right. So I think it's going to take some sort of a lightning strike in order for people to get enraged enough to do that, and hopefully it won't come to that.
What do you think with these people? I know this is a hard one. Are these people within all of the media heads and these people that are pushing this narrative out there, like you say, they're lock in step with the message, Jim. Do you think these people are completely deranged? Are they just, are they out totally for lunch, or do they know what they're really doing?
I think they know what they're doing.
Wow.
If you look at the people who are imposing the most draconian, conditions like closing churches, doing those sorts of things, can't get together for Christmas. They apply none of those rules to themselves. They close all these businesses, but they continue to get paid. So in their mind, they're essentially the ruling class, and what the rest of us who are ordinary Americans feel or think doesn't really matter, because it doesn't matter to them if they have to cheat to win, because once they're in power, they can just tell us to pound sand, which is what the Dems have done a lot of times. You know, one of the things that bothers me a lot is that we're allowing the Democrats to establish the standards of proof in the case of this election fraud. You know, I think, and you can't do it, of course, because the media is not on your side, but I think it would make a lot more sense in the ocean of election fraud that we've seen for Biden's crew to be responsible for showing how it wasn't fraud. But we just nominally accept, you know, that usually in most cases, the aggressor wins because they have the choice of the timing and the place and the means of attack. And that's what has happened. The Democrats have already declared him the president-elect of the United States, and they're attacking Trump and anyone else who wants to have that an assessment of whether or not the election was fair and honest. And it's a lot harder to take it away from them once they've got it, if the press and everyone else claims that they really do have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the left is far more organized. They always have been, they always do, and they have the megaphone to the nation, and they're in the right place at the right time to take us down, because they are so organized. The right, they're not organized at all, and they don't attack this thing in the same way. So that would stand to reason that we're always on defense, it seems, to defend our nation.
That's because the Democrats mm-hmm. will do anything it takes. Mm-hmm. And they realize that regardless of whether they're lying or being deceptive or misleading, and that what you're really manipulating is hope and fear. Mm-hmm. It's hope and fear that's the important decision driver in most of our lives. We think it's logic. It's not logic. The only time that we're interested in logic is when we think of something that's rational, that supports the background emotion that we have, either hope or fear. And if you can control hope and you can control fear, then you can control the masses.
Finally, Jim, one last thought to you. I want to mention to you interesting tweet put out by Dr. Carol Swain, one of our colleagues on the network here and a great national voice in America. And I want to talk to you about around the world here and our last thought here. And she says this: one thing we are witnessing is the humbling of America. We can no longer point a self-righteous finger at other nations. We are as corrupt and evil as our favorite punching bags. And she ends it with this: I wonder what Putin is thinking. Of course, you could say also what Xi Jinping or any of them are thinking, for that matter. How do you say America's reputation right now, and you look at the global environment right now, it's a bit of an embarrassing moment or a humbling moment for our country, or how would you size it up?
Well, I would say it's a moment of opportunity. You know, there's clear evidence of fraud in the election, and we claim to be a democratic republic, right? And so what we would like is we would like for that case to have occurred and that it be resolved in a peaceful way in the court of law, in a way that supports the facts, right? And so it could be the case that if we allow them to steal this election, that indeed we are as bad as everybody else. But if we can control it, get it resolved in a way where all the legitimate legal votes are counted and the fraudulent votes are thrown out, then what we've demonstrated to the world is that even in the case of a very difficult crisis, we can do the right thing.
You're listening there to the voice of Dr. James Mitchell, and you see why I enjoy having him on. It's one of my favorites to have on here, quite frankly, for a lot of reasons. I've known Jim for many years, but he just brings a different level of conversation to the table, which I so appreciate. You know, what he just said is so important. In fact, I'm going to name the show, this entire episode, with what he just said: America's moment of opportunity. Isn't that the way it should be, people? Isn't that how we should look at this moment? And that is a glass half full viewpoint, if there ever was one, right? America's moment of opportunity. And that's what we need to do right now. We need to stand tall and grab this moment of opportunity back to that reputation of America and what it stands for around the globe. As I say to you all the time, evil will always exist. It has existed since the beginning of mankind. It will be here all the way through. Our job is to put the good fight up. We'll do that, and we'll continue more as Viewpoint continues.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
I like that. America's moment of opportunity. It's a good way to look at it, isn't it, friends? And I know that's hard for some people to wrap your arms around. I get it. I totally get it. But it is a mindset, and we've got to start here. If we're going to put a stake in the ground and say this is what it's going to be, we have to do that here. Welcome back to Viewpoint. I want to share with you a post I had put out on social media. This particular one happened to be LinkedIn, a very short post, and it said this: if we allow the theft of this election 2020 to go unchallenged or ignored simply to get along with our enemies so that a peaceful transition, which they did not give President Donald Trump, can legitimize their crimes, then we deserve the government we get. Now, that is a stake in the ground statement, but the point of telling you that is the comment. There's one particular comment I got in from a gentleman named Bill, and I want to read back to you what he said, because it's very poignant to the moment here. And Bill says this: going along to get along never fits. It leads to tyranny. Through history, all other nations lost their freedom the same way as is taken place right here in the USA. And he says, little by little, they infiltrate into strategic areas of government ever so subtly, right? As citizens of the greatest nation on God's green earth, we must stand for something. And then that something must be freedom, by standing firm with the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence, which so many patriots shed their blood, lost their homes and businesses, because they knew just how important these documents are to and for a free society. If you don't know the history of how these documents came about and why, then you don't understand your own personal freedom, regardless of where you stand today. Take a stand, America, for freedom. I'm thankful for your patriotism, Malcolm. Well, that was an amazing comment to me from Bill, and I appreciate it very much. And I share it with you today because it struck me as something important we need to share. It is that stake in the ground, and it is the theme I give you up front with Dr. James Mitchell, and that is America's moment of opportunity. Now I think we're getting somewhere, my fellow Americans, and let me bring on Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host of the Friedman Report. I want to talk about stealing the votes and read you a little passage from an article I'll tell folks about a little bit that you have up on the platform. And you say this: from harvesting votes prior to the elections from people who may or may not have been eligible or competent to vote, or taken advantage of the elderly and the mentally challenged by collecting their signatures and then voting for them, to demanding and implementing mail-in voting, which could be compromised in many different ways, to flipping votes from red to blue on machines that could be manipulated to alter the voting totals, and manufacturing ballots to use as needed in the wee hours of the morning of November 4th. Nothing was out of bounds in the Democrats' quest to win at all cost. Ilana, you give a good summary there, an encapsulation of many of the stories we're talking about, from sea to shining sea. There's a litany of them now. And I first started to position these as sort of insurance policies. It seemed like the current day redcoats were using to bring down America here. It is quite interesting looking at this whole, it is a conspiracy. It is a plan to do something.
Well, I believe it is a conspiracy. In my article, I said the fact that just because you call it a conspiracy theory doesn't mean there isn't a conspiracy there. And it looks to me very clearly like there is a massive conspiracy at all levels of the Democrat Party, from the Central Committee right down to the local operatives who were changing and hiding and releasing illegitimate votes and count and adding them into the vote count. You know, I was looking at the numbers that were presented to the Nevada judge, and they're unbelievable. Biden had a margin of about 33.5, maybe 33.6 thousand votes, in which they say he won the state. But break those numbers, break down some of the numbers that the Republicans have found. 2,500 votes by voters who had legally changed their address to another state or another country. 42,000 voters who voted twice in Nevada. 1,500 voters who were listed as deceased by Social Security. 20,000 Nevada voters with a non-Nevada mailing address. And 6,000 post office flags on vacant addresses where nobody's living, so nobody could be voting there from there. And what you end up with is 72,000 fraudulent votes. Now, remember, the margin of win for Biden was only 33,500 votes. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about a difference of some 36,000 votes that could be for Trump, that would make the difference mm-hmm. of Trump winning or Biden winning. The judge tossed it out completely, and his remarks were so offensive. He said, it's over. The Biden won. Forget it. You know, go home, essentially.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these local contests have worked that way because the whole political system at the bench is so politicized, Ilana, and that really the states are running the courts, you know, in a lot of these states, correct? Right.
And yes, that's correct. In fact, in Nevada, the judges are elected. So it's highly political.
Exactly. So that's the whole egregious thing about this, which is why the only answer is, as I was talking to Dr. James Mitchell about up front, is to get it to the Supreme Court. How confident are you that this all gets to the Supreme Court in a timely manner?
Well, I don't think all of it will get to the Supreme Court. But what we're hoping for is that the key cases mm-hmm. with the most evidence will get to the Supreme Court mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court will rule on the basis of the constitutionality of what has been going on. And mm-hmm. and if what has been going on has been unconstitutional, they will rule accordingly. I think the makeup of the court now is that it is constitution-based. They're mm-hmm. It's not an activist court anymore. So hopefully that will be the outcome. And if that's the case, and all of these fraudulent activities are found to have been unconstitutional, then I think the outcome should be clear. But, you know, we have to wait. We just don't know. It depends which cases they select, if they select any. The Supreme Court has to decide that they'll hear the case. And then it's a matter of which yeah. case they hear. So, you know, we really have to wait and see. But I have great faith in this court. I have no faith in our electoral system anymore.
Do you think there's any chance the Supreme Court says hands off, we're not going to touch it?
I think it's a possibility. I'm hoping it's unlikely because there is such a great constitutional issue. One of the things that I'd really like to say here is that when our founding fathers created this country, they did something so remarkable. They did something that had never been seen anywhere on earth. They created a country where the government is elected, selected, chosen by we the people, mm-hmm. and that government is answerable and responsible to the people, not the other way around, the way it is in the rest of the world. The Democrats have done now has been to take away our constitutionally guaranteed right to elect our representatives in Washington. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, they have countermanded the fundamental principle of how and why America was founded and created in the first place. And this is reprehensible in the extreme. It absolutely has to be stopped or we will lose our nation completely.
Yeah, I love what you say there. It's a great reminder, again, of the opportunity of America, Ilana. So thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. Any doubt that this was or not a concerted effort? It appears that from what you've just put out, those are only the votes we know of in Nevada. That's only the ones we know of. You know, how many
those
don't we know
mail-in
of?
Votes, I think. Yeah. Yeah. The whole situation, I have no doubt that it was a concerted effort, not only in Nevada, but in Wisconsin and Michigan and Georgia, Arizona. All these states have been subject to, and probably others that we don't know about, have been subject to the total corruption. And that's what it is. It is total corruption. It was total disregard of the rules, of the laws. And my guess is that what they did is unconstitutional as well, which makes it a very, very serious crime, not just a misaction. This is a crime that has been committed against the American people.
There seems to be with this effort we're talking about where there's a lot of onesies and a lot of, the improprieties of this election continue to come up every hour of every day, Ilana. But it's hard to imagine for most people thinking, well, how did this whole thing, really grow seeds and really, become what it is right now, back to this conspiracy, this plan to, take over an election and do whatever you're going to do with the country. There are a lot of distractions in play right now, for sure. But I think for a lot of people, they're having a hard time understanding or getting their arms around this, because it's not like there were a bunch of people in a room, in a smoky-filled room, where they come out and said, okay, we got a grand plan. This is how we're going to do this. This is our concerted effort, our conspiracy to win the election. Although on the flip side of that, Ilana, I would suggest to you, there are a lot of interesting people that are silent right now. I sort of call it the calm before the storm. I get the sense that we're waiting for that other shoe to drop, and it's a gut-wrenching feeling I have right now. What is your assessment of what I say there with that room, that smoky-filled room, versus this effort and conspiracy to take down and the silence of a lot of people in our country? What's your assessment of that?
You know, this is the sum of a very long process that began after the Second World War, when the communists decided to infiltrate our country. And they did infiltrate, not the way that Joe McCarthy thought in the entertainment industry and others, and he ruined a lot of lives. But there was infiltration, and it was done very quietly, very silently. They just brought in people who could share their philosophy, which was socialism and communism. And they did this slowly. They infiltrated our local governments. They infiltrated our schools. They taught our children the broad outlines of socialist thinking. They stopped educating our children. Our children grew up to be entitled to learn and understand that all they had to do was show up. They didn't have to compete. They didn't educate our kids. They didn't teach them to think critically. And now what we have is a whole three generations who have produced children who are now adults, who are now running riot in the streets, who are now attacking each other, who believe that they're entitled to all kinds of things that they didn't earn, that they don't own. There are people who are taking over other people's property, homes, land, and saying, now it's ours. Why? I mean, this is because this is what they have been taught. Socialism has been in has infected our schools, our education system, and we now have two generations or three generations of young adults who believe this stuff.
But you're saying that's the point of why this thing has grown, been the seedling that it is, and why it seems to have taken root in our country. It is absolutely a battle right now that's playing out, Ilana. You call out in your article, the party of corruption. It's very good. It's on the front page of America Out Loud here Sunday morning. You should go look at that. You talk about the massive voter fraud that pervaded the 2020 elections has dwarfed any past efforts to compromise the integrity of our election process. The scope of the Democrats' efforts to marginalize our individual votes is beyond anything we've seen in this country in its entire history. How confident are you right now that this damage can be undone and that, you know, or is your feeling that the time is slipping away and that Biden may very well be your president?
Well, the time is slipping away, and Biden, depending on what happens in the courts and in the Supreme Court, if it gets there, Biden may be our president, in which case America is in deep trouble. But if we are successful in getting the cases to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court rules in favor of the Constitution, then I think we have an opportunity, and there is a possibility of making this right and correcting all the damage that has been done. But to do that, we need a strong president, a strong Congress, meaning both houses of Congress, and we need to believe in the American dream and the principles that made America great from day one.
Always a big thank you and a pleasure to have Ilana Friedman with us. Now, I want to ask you a question right now. If we asked Americans who was the biggest threat to our country, Trump voters, Biden voters, China, Russia, or North Korea, how do you think they'd answer that question? I'll have the answer to that and a whole bunch more just after the pause as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint. So I asked you that question before the pause. If we asked Americans who was the biggest threat to our country, Trump voters, Biden voters, China, Russia, or North Korea, how do you think they'd answer that? It is interesting. It goes along with the division we find ourselves in our nation here. Bradley Devlin is with us. He's a reporter for the Daily Caller, graduated from UC Berkeley, and was the president of the Berkeley College Republicans. No small task, Bradley. So good to have you with us here on Viewpoint. And this was a poll survey kind of thing that you reported on. You did a story about this. It is a little surprising, maybe, but again, it goes with how divided we are. What did you take out of this thing?
37% of Republican respondents said that Biden supporters constituted the biggest threat. The second most popular answer was China with 34%. Overall, we found that the Rasmussen survey found that 24% of the respondents said President-elect Joe Biden's voters are the nation's biggest enemy, and 22% said Donald Trump. China received 24% of that vote, Russia 10%, and North Korea 7%. Mm. So if you wanted something to track the deep schisms in our country that probably persisted before the election, or definitely persisted before the election, but it's even intensified with the results of the election, I mean, this survey perfectly encapsulates it, in my opinion.
Well, it goes to the bigger theory, though, and thought process that we talk about a lot, Bradley, which that our biggest enemy is not overseas, is not abroad. It's here in our country. But that's always going to be the case, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly part of that. You know, it's really easy to perceive the threats that are coming from inside the house as much more palpable, as much more immediate than those coming from thousands of miles away, half a world away from places like China and Russia. Now, that doesn't mean that China and Russia are more set on our destruction than our fellow Americans. That just means that, you know, we pay closer attention to our fellow Americans, and that has its pros and obviously its cons.
This division, and there's two worldviews we have of America here. Now, you're seeing it as a young guy coming up through school, and give us a perspective. We hear a lot about the indoctrination through education. In fact, just in the previous segment before this, Bradley, that was discussed, how this is being propagated through the schools and the indoctrination of that. Is that a true statement? What's your sense of that, being new coming out of the school system? How'd you feel about that?
Well, coming out of a recent college graduate, I would say that if it's going to get better, it's going to be because the left has decided that they're going to dominate the politics of future generations. That doesn't bode well for conservatives in the long term. So if there is some sort of de-escalation as millennials, as Gen Zers become more frequent voters, come into more positions of prominence in society, it'll be because the left is going to want to declare victory.
Bradley, aren't they doing that right now, trying to declare victory right now?
To a certain extent, they are. And I do agree that we have a chance to get it right. But if we let this fester for too long, it's going to be all but too late for those conservatives who are trying to save what they feel is left of the American social fabric.
What is it that the people coming through the system on the left, what is the worldview? What kind of an America do you think that, because it's so different from a guy like you and certainly a guy like me. How do they look at that as attractive, do you think?
Well, they're not taught why it's attractive. They're taught these grandiose ideas of diversity and inclusion and equality. and they take basically the Spark Notes version of great American debates that we've had over centuries. You know, why is the Senate relatively undemocratic compared to the House? Why is that effective for American governance? And they're taught to hate these systems, especially the Electoral College. Obviously, in the past two election cycles, we've seen those calls to get rid of the Electoral College become even more vibrant among the left. So that's what I'm seeing, is that a lot of these students are just kind of taught by professors who have a vested interest in the Democratic Party's performance. You see that at UC Berkeley, where their chief academic is a lawyer playing economist, and Robert Reich, who is the labor secretary for President Bill Clinton. So these are the classes that students are sitting in every day, where I took Professor Reich's class, and he said with a straight face that Stacey Abrams should be the legitimate governor of Georgia. Wow. That isn't the case. I'm sorry, professor. That isn't the case. But you know who believes it? The 600 students sitting in that lecture hall, because he's a very energetic lecturer. He's a very kind man when you talk to him personally. But he has these zany out there ideas that aren't challenged in class, because it's almost like this soft bigotry of policing speech that is permeating American society now. The Cato Institute just found that most Americans aren't willing to share their political opinions in fear of retribution. And so it doesn't have to be violent retribution. It just has to be that social ostracization that I think it's going to become even more common as people in my generation get into positions of power.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Electoral College, and it seems to me that, I mean, from what you just said and from what I'm gathering, they really do want to, you know, remove the Electoral College, go right to the popular vote, and they've convinced themselves. But what they're not realizing is that is the whole essence of the United States of America. If we don't have the Electoral College, we are no longer the United States, because every state would not even have a piece of the vote, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, what is attractive about this viewpoint? Well, what's attractive about this viewpoint is because they constantly use other Western European democracies that are vastly different in size and scale and scope and culture to compare to the United States. For instance, these small Scandinavian countries, it's relatively easy when you have some sort of homogeneous culture where there's a small geographic area that don't have vast cultural divides, to go forward with more parliamentary system. But with a country as vast as the United States, with a country as diverse and with as so many prevailing economic interests across the country, it would be irresponsible.
Do you think in your lifetime that this will happen?
Throwing away the Electoral College? No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be very difficult for the states that want to reform the Electoral College to get enough states to really hop on that bandwagon. I do think what I worry about, though, is that the Electoral College could be all but ineffective because you have a bunch of states saying that they're only going to pledge their Electoral College votes despite the outcome of the election in their respective mm-hmm. states to the individual candidate that receives the popular vote. So I think that the Electoral College isn't going to go away, but I do think that there are going to be concentrated efforts from the left to get rid of the Electoral College by making it ineffective.
Which would really be the same result. I mean, it would no longer be effective, as you say there. So it would give them the same result they're looking for. Pretty sad indeed here. There's been a lot of talk about going after Trump officials, I'm seeing, and you wrote about this as well. They were putting Republicans on list, or they were putting conservatives on list. And I started hearing that just before the election, actually, and been building around and whatever that was all going to mean. And now we're seeing the schools that are pressuring people not to bar any Trump administration officials or anybody in any position with Trump, bar them from the faculty or be any part of the school system here. It's pretty outrageous here. They're calling this some sort of an accountability point. And actually, the Daily Caller obtained all kinds of letters and documentation, which you commented and documented about in your article. Tell us about this. And this is a really dangerous, dangerous sign here.
Well, for your viewers, as we talk about this story, the most important backdrop is, you mentioned it, they're putting conservatives on lists. They want to ostracize conservatives from civil society. Mm-hmm. Connecting this back to the campus is showing that these crazy campus ideologies and ideas that we thought were once relegated to the campus is now mainstream in our institutions, in politics, in media, as, of course, these individuals have graduated from these institutions and gone on to positions of power. So yeah, what this report outlines is that after Harvard started these efforts to bar or quote unquote hold accountable, create a system of accountability for Trump officials trying to become fellows or faculty members after their tenures in the administration, that is now going elsewhere across the country. It's being coordinated at schools like Princeton, and they're actually soliciting other public policy schools to join on to this effort. I wouldn't be shocked if Berkeley is a domino to fall, Brown, Dartmouth, you know, Yale, a lot of these elite institutions that pride themselves on this, what they believe is this liberal progressive heritage that they hold. They are unabashedly trying to pressure these administrators and these administrations into preventing free academic exchange on their campus.
Well, since they're running the programs, do they get away with it?
I think they would get away with it if these Harvard students actually took their efforts beyond the shadows of WhatsApp chats, actually drafted these letters and openly pressured these administrations through holding protests and demonstrations. I don't think that the administrations would have a chance because they would cave, because a lot of these administrations are, you know, reliant on donors that are widely progressive and liberal donors. And a lot of these donors are getting behind some of these movements is what we've obtained as well. So I could very easily see these institutions caving. And they've caved for years on all sorts of different fronts, from professors being relegated to the sidelines or suspended because they uttered phrases in Chinese, teaching their students the Chinese language that sounds like a racial slur. That actually happened on a college campus not long ago at UC Berkeley. We've seen conservative students, we've seen conservative professors, we've seen conservative guest speakers assaulted We've seen them shouted down. We've seen efforts to get them kicked off of campus time and time again.
Yeah. Bradley, is there a short answer in fixing this?
No, there isn't. But the shortest answer I could give is that the conservative establishment, the right, really needs to start fighting the college campus culture war. That's it. You can't just cede the ground to the left and say, oh, well, we have the Senate. Don't worry. We have the Supreme Court. We'll save everything there. No, that's not a good strategy for long-term success.
Yeah. No, what you say is perfect, Bradley. It's not just that, but it's look at who owns all the social media outlets, who owns all the media, who owns, you know, all of it, social media, all the newspapers, all the television. I mean, they own the megaphone to society, which is part and parcel why we're having a problem right now in election 2020, isn't it?
120%. I mean, these institutions deserve real challengers. And that's why you've seen so many conservative outlets like the Daily Caller have such great success in the digital media space in the digital media age. And so what I fear is that sensible regulations that should be imposed on big tech, right? Those regulations in a Biden administration are going to be extended to outlets like the Daily Wire, like the Daily Caller, like the Washington Examiner. A lot of these outlets that use digital media to reach people where they are, instead of these cable news giants that just cover Biden in the nicest terms possible. I mean, they lied about Biden having the first rescue dog in the White House. LBJ was actually the first rescue dog, or the first president to have a rescue dog in the White House. And they didn't even bother giving it a quick Google search. So I fear that the Biden administration is going to use speech instead of sensible targeted regulations on big tech to do a broad campaign of censorship instead of just a targeted campaign to hold these tech companies accountable for when they affect meddle in the election by censoring stories from the New York Post and locking the Trump campaign and the press secretary and the New York Post out of their Twitter accounts.
Yeah. Let's in the time we have left, let's do a little roundtable, you and I. I want to get your honest opinion on a few things right now, as it stands right now. And as we are every day reaching more and more to a December 14th, when the Electoral College will make their stand. What is your take right now on the chances of Trump getting to the Supreme Court with something versus Biden, who has already been declared the appointed one? What do you think the chances are?
Sadly, I think it's near zero. Now, does that mean that I think no voter fraud happened? Of course not. Of course, voter fraud happened in this election. Of course, there are different instances that look fishy. Of course, there are plenty of affidavits that deserve perusing through. If you are watching this at home, you need to look into these issues and really, really scrutinize them. Sadly, with the powers that be, the institutions that we have set up right now, I worry that there is no legitimate path for Trump moving forward. Now, would I prefer a Trump presidency over Biden presidency? Of course. This is just my honest opinion where we are now.
Right.
If we have something that breaks, that could definitely change.
Right. And we talked about that actually up front in the program, that it would take one state right now to be able to flip, and that might be able to create some momentum. It was discussed with Dr. Mitchell up front of the discussion. At the end of the day here, people, I've dubbed this episode America's Moment of Opportunity. And although it might seem erroneous to some, as Dr. James Mitchell pointed out at the top of the program, it is an opportunity for America to get it right. We will see how history judges all of this and what we do next, for sure. A big thank you here to Bradley Devlin, and having him on, and all of our guests here on Viewpoint. Now, in the next hour, Michael Johns is up with us on Viewpoint Presents. We'll continue on with all the election shenanigans and talk about this moment of opportunity. Let's continue on here, friends, and thank you, as always, for being on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.